You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome back to That Chelsea Podcast, the podcast that is Wembley-bound as Chelsea overturn a 1-0 first leg deficit with a commanding, dominant, near-perfect display in the second leg with a 6-1 victory over Middlesbrough. Joining me to look back as Chelsea secure yet another date at Wembley, it's Miss Jessica Frosser. Jess, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. Today is a good day. I mean, if by any chance I did not break the curse the last time around because we, you know, we qualified and had a draw, this time around we actually won the game. So I can safely say there is no curse.
Yeah, indeed, indeed said. If anyone's being a Scrooge and not giving the Newcastle one because it went to a penalty shootout, this one we won in regulation time. And it means that Jess's two fun stat before I delve into many, many stats episodes, the two wins Chelsea. Jess has been on the pod to discuss Chelsea winning in 90 minutes have been goals. We've been games where Chelsea scored six goals, a 6-0 win against Southampton, and a 6-1 win today against Middlesbrough. Jess, as I always do, guests, I get them to give themselves a plug to tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm on Twitter at @je_frota, @je_frota. So I'm always open to talking about all things, and obviously particularly Chelsea.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Jess's links will be in the description below. Right, there's a lot to talk about. Jess, let's get into it. First up, I want to say, Raheem Sterling squared a ball. Raheem Sterling squared a ball. He squared it twice. Wonderful scenes. But obviously, let's get into it. That's the first goal that gets it going. He squares it for Armando, and then Armando takes a touch and Johnny Howson bums it in. But just a quick word, like, you know, the goals will kind of be linked into performances, I guess, when we talk about this. But Raheem Sterling, like, he's, you know, just a solid professional performance from him, you know, did what was required tonight, you know, on a night that could have potentially been frustrating. And he just, you know, he kept it simple and just, you know, squared the ball. I just guess, Raheem, why weren't you doing that before? But, Jess, it was nice to see that Raheem Sterling had learned to square a football.
Yeah, I think he was really, really good. I would have him probably at, you know, a top three performance for Chelsea. He was involved in all of our first three goals. And as you said, you know, the first goal was almost like that key moment because it took all the pressure off, I think. I mean, not all of it off, but it was all about scoring early, right? And then having a lot of time to win the match. And the fact that he was directly involved, as you said, in the first goal. And I mean, I'm counting that as an assist, so like an assist for him. But he was great. He was stretching the pitch. He was playing really, really well with De Zazzi, in the first half, even more so than the second half, I think. So really, really happy with him. And he is someone that is often severely criticized by the fan base, myself included. And I think it's fair to an extent because he is supposed to be that stable, calming, experienced person, player for us, Saji and squad. And I think the problem with him is just his consistency, because he has shown time and time again that he can produce at a very high level, but you know, it's not that consistent. It doesn't come very often, in my opinion. And so I'm very, very hard on him just because I know what he can do. And today he was very, very solid and showed that he can be very important for us. So lovely to see.
Yeah. Indeed. Just second goal then puts us in three. Enzo Fernandez. And just to be fair, considering the positions he was taken up in that first 30 minutes, it can't have been, it wasn't that surprising, but he did find himself on the score sheet. Just a thought, I mean, Enzo Fernandez, you know, it was just a real, you know, just masterful, commanding performance from Enzo, kind of performance you'd expect from him. But just, it was a very interesting role he took up in that first sort of half an hour. I mean, it seemed that as soon as after he got his goal, he was like, right, I've got to go back to doing my proper job. Interesting, and just thoughts on him being, you know, playing that role sort of up, because at times it did feel like he was sort of just like a second striker for us, given how high up he was playing. And I guess that was partly due to, you know, Johnny Howson at times dropping back and, you know, being a centre back, you know, in a back five compared to a back four at various points. But yeah, Enzo, we've often moaned about him, you know, him being utilised too high up the pitch at times. I think he's probably the highest up the pitch I can remember him in the game for Chelsea. But fair play, you know, that the first 30 minutes, you know, it justified it, albeit it did mean that he was, you know, not necessarily involved in build up play further back. But you know, then after that, he gets that goal. He then, you know, drops back and he's sort of back in the more usual commanding position we see him in. And he is just very much, you know, just going through the gears. Said his game by numbers: 89% pass accuracy, 77 touches, 54 out of 61 passes completed, 7 out of 9 long balls completed, 5 out of 8 ground drills won, 3 out of 5 tackles won, 2 key passes, and 1 goal. He just did pull the string. Just thought on his performance and particularly sort of his interesting role in that first 30 minutes.
I will divide it. I think in the first 20 minutes, I was shouting at my TV because I do not want to see Enzo in the same line as the striker all the time. One thing that I like with how he plays under our current manager is that he gets a lot of freedom to roam forward. And I know that's something that he likes to do, but I don't see the need, and I don't think he needs to be that high all the time. And I also think that he helps us a lot more when he plays deeper, closer to the center backs, just because of the quality of his pass and how much better we get when he is involved in the buildup. So I was very stressed with that, I'm not going to lie. And I think actually after the first goal, he started to come back and help the center backs in creating. I think he noticed that Moises was not getting a lot of passes. I don't know if it was something that the manager decided to shift or that he decided to do on his own, reading what was happening in the game, but he decided to come back a lot more and it helped us. And with his goal, for me, it was actually perfect because he started that whole play in midfield, building up the play, and then he just ran and crashed the box and scored. So for me, it showed what the ideal world would be in, like what the ideal world would be for him and the position for him and how he can be best utilized, which is helping with the buildup, you know, helping out Moises Caicedo, but also having the freedom to crash the box. And it all comes with maturity and understanding at which point he can go forward. Because at the beginning of the game, I was sure that he was told to do that, to just be all the time close to the striker. Now I'm not sure if he was told to do that or if just because he had that freedom, he decided on his own. Whatever it was, I really, really don't want to see it again. But more of the goals, please. More of the crashing late into the box. And as you said, reminded us, I think it was you that said it, reminded us of our late number 8. And that's something that I think he can contribute a lot as well. And he was obviously very moved with his goal and showed a lot of passion. And was one of his, after that, it was one of his best games for us, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Chelsea's third goal scorer was Axel Disasi. Jess, it was kind of like a theme of the night, but we would see that Middlesbrough would essentially be caught out playing from back, and Chelsea would press up high. Palmer plays ball down the line, sort of through Sterling. Sterling again crosses it, squares it for Axel Disasi to score his first goal since that opening day against Liverpool, where you were also on. So you've been on the pod to discuss both Axel Disasi's Chelsea goals so far. His game by numbers: 107 touches, 88% pass accuracy, 74 out of 84 passes completed, 3 out of 4 ground duels won, 3 out of 3 tackles won, 1 key pass, 1 goal. I mean, Jess, it was just, you know, a really solid night. Obviously, we knew that Malo Gusto was out, and, you know, it potentially could be a little bit tricky, you know, Chelsea, because we know that he's, you know, struggled at times at a right back, but it was sort of the perfect night for him. He was able to link up play, you know, pretty well. And then, as said, he, you know, gets that goal. Just a really, really encouraging night from a player who's, you know, come under, you know, quite a lot of pressure from Chelsea fans for just kind of just being a bit underwhelmed by his signing. And I think, you know, there's no reason to go overboard tonight. But this felt like, again, just on a night that was basically almost perfect. It was, again, just really nice to see, you know, him get on the score sheet as well, wasn't it?
100%. I was one of the people that was definitely not excited to see him playing right back. Nothing against him. I'm just not huge on the center back playing, you know, fullback. So I was really hoping that we got, you know, that we would get to see Chili B. But I was, and I knew that Disasi had to play, but I wasn't looking forward. I was a little bit concerned, and we needed to score, and that was not ideal. And boy, did he prove me wrong. For me, he was absolutely fantastic in the first half. When he moved to center back later on the game, he made a few mistakes, and I think he could have done better when they scored the goal. But I'm giving him a lot of leeway just because I think he just didn't have legs anymore because he was just running up and down all the time, the fullback role. And so I think he deserves a lot of credit for tonight.
Yeah, indeed. As I said, Cole Palmer kills that tie off just before half time again. Middlesbrough caught out playing, and Cole Palmer slots home, making amends for last week. I'll continue the Cole Palmer conversation in a bit. But Jess, obviously tonight, you know, we saw the first start since, I believe, that Brighton Carabao Cup tie for Ben Chilwell. He got 65 minutes in the tank, and again, I thought that was a really encouraging display from him. His game by numbers: 95% pass accuracy, 58 touches, 8 duels contested, 6 duels won, 2 successful take-ons, 2 tackles, 1 chances created, 0 fouls, 0 times dribble pass. Obviously, he is the one who kind of plays that ball in behind for, you know, the first goal for Sterling to then square to Armando. And he obviously was a threat early on as well, you know, trying to exploit, get that space game behind Bones when he, you know, heads over from a Thiago diagonal. For a player making his first start in a long time, I said he looked good off the bench against Fulham. That was just, again, you know, just a really encouraging display from him tonight, wasn't it?
I don't know how there are still people that still underrate him because he is such a threat, such a good left back. I'm thrilled to have him back. I was seeing the stats that we only had like Chili B and Reece James playing together for 11 games since the Champions League, which was in 2021. So, you know, it just makes you think of how much better as a team, as a settled squad and team, we would be if we had both of them fit. Absolutely the best left back that we have. Incredible to see him playing again. I was expecting him to play for 60 minutes. He got 65. So I, you know, very close, and I hope we can see more of him against Villa. And what I will say for people that follow me, that have been following the whole saga with my mom. So my mom hates football, or used to hate football, would only watch World Cup, and slowly I've been introducing Chelsea to her. She started with the Chelsea women, and now she's slowly watching the Chelsea men. So she watched the game with me today. So it was the first time that she actually watched Ben Chilwell, and her favorite players were Cole Palmer and Ben Chilwell. So I guess that's something there that, you know, she obviously doesn't know much about football, but she could see how special that he is.
Yeah, I've just got to say, Jess, you know, to a lot of people out there, your mum just got this horrendous English bias as well. Two favorite players, but no, Chili was excellent again. You know, just get the job
Yeah,
done
and
and get him
oh,
wrapped in
her.
Cornwall.
I will say that her favorite Chelsea woman player is also Lauren James, and so she was a bit bummed when I told her that she couldn't watch today, like her brother today, because she was so excited for that. And she was like, "But where's the James? Where's the?" Because she calls him the James. And she's like, "Where's the James?" And I'm like, right there, sitting right there, behind the bench, and she's like, oh, okay.
Lovely story of that. And then, as I said, you know, we kind of think, you know, some subs gets made, and we'll get onto them in a bit. And we kind of think, oh, this game is petering out. And then Jess, Chelsea spark into life. Conor Gallagher sets up Cole Palmer to make it 5, and it meant Cole Palmer completed, you know, a double for Chelsea. That was the first time he'd scored 2 goals in a game at Stamford Bridge. Yeah, and after 22 games, he's already scored more goals across all competitions than any Chelsea player last season. His game by numbers, 80% pass accuracy, 61 touches, 35 out of 44 passes completed, 6 dribbles, 3 ground duels won, 2 key passes, 2 goals, 1 big chance created. Just a really, really good display from him. And yeah, it was really nice seeing him. He's the only Ollie Watkins, 22, has been involved in more in goals for Premier League clubs in all competitions among English players this season than Cole Palmer, who's got 20, 13 goals, 7 assists. Yeah, and he's now scored the same or maybe even more now, depending on the age of his tweet, than goals than Sean Ryan Phillips and Adrian Mutu for Chelsea. Just a nice, fun stat for you there. Jess, very much a night where Cole Palmer made amends for a very difficult first leg.
Yeah, I will say what I love about Cole, and he is what we would call in Brazil, queridinho da torcida, which means that he was very, very rapidly, very quickly loved by the fan base, and like is almost like a sweetheart of the fan base. What I love about him is his consistency. So I think he had one poor game for us. He had games where he was incredibly impressive, and he had good games, and he had one poor game. And so I think that's very impressive for his age. And he also doesn't lose his flair. He doesn't lose his confidence. He doesn't, you know, lose the mentality. He's really fantastic. And I wish we could have seen him maybe get a few minutes rest today, because, you know, obviously we have Aston Villa, but he continues to impress me with how much he produces, his numbers, but also the way that he plays, the way that he passes. He gave a pass, I think, for the second goal, first for Sterling, who then gave it, you know, the assist to De Zazzi. It was just, wow, it was phenomenal. So I just love him, and I can't wait to see more of him, which we should be able to do considering his very long contract.
Indeed. And as I said, Jess, the thing I find when I watch Cole Palmer is he's just so efficient. At the start of that game, he wasn't really necessarily involved a huge amount of us that opening 20 minutes. I found he's a bit quiet, and I was a bit, you know, worried about him being sort of central again, because I think he's better out wide. But then again, he sort of just has a unit where he can just come into the game, and then he's just so decisive in that game. So we read out his stats for him. He said he gets a couple of goals. He plays a key part in laying a ball on for Stone for De Zazzi, etc. He also then, you know, potentially, you know, could have got De Zazzi a second goal later on with a lovely ball. And it's just, I think, just what's really nice about him is he's a player that maybe, you know, spells and games can be quiet, but then he will just at points just burst into life. And he's quite often, as he's done this season, will just be a difference maker and a player that can, you know, help Chelsea get that big win, or in the case of today, just help Chelsea kill off his tie and, you know, just make the key contributions to kill off his tie.
What I also love about him is that he is courageous. He doesn't try the safest pass, you know, the safe pass. He always looks for something different, for the best pass, and not necessarily the safest. And so he's not afraid to do take-ons. He's not afraid of a bit of flair, right? And I think we missed that almost. And I think he brings that to the side. And as you said, he's efficient as well. So it's the best of both worlds.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, indeed. As I said, Middlesbrough get a late consolation with Morgan Rodgers, who may well be, you know, not if he's been linked with a move to Aston Villa, that's not a bad way to, you know, to try and get a move over the line. It meant that he's the first Middlesbrough player to score at Stamford Bridge in any competition since Alan Boksic on the 23rd September 2001. He ended a run of 9 games without scoring at Stamford Bridge. Instead, Chelsea won 6-1, which meant that only two sides have ever scored 6-plus goals in a League Cup semi-final second leg. The other was Aston Villa against Blackburn in 2009-10. It means that Chelsea have reached 18 domestic cup finals since 2000. That's the most by the big six. Next on that list is Man United with 12. You've got Arsenal 11, Liverpool on 10, who will be looking to make that 11 tomorrow night. Man City on 10, Tottenham on 5. It was a truly, truly just wonderful night. And they said Chelsea have now reached the EFL Cup final for the 10th time in their history. Only Liverpool 13 have reached the final more times in the competition's history. Jess, obviously at 4-0, you know, the tie was basically dead at halftime. We knew that. We were 45 minutes from Wembley. And I guess it was an opportunity for subs to be made and with an eye on the Aston Villa Cup tie on Friday. Mikhailo Mudryk is withdrawn at halftime for Noni Madueke. Jess, I would say Mikhailo Mudryk, I thought, just was very quiet in that first half, was not that effective. And you then compare that, Noni Madueke comes on that second half, and we get a little bit of a scare a few minutes in when he goes down clutching his shoulder and thinking, oh God, is that another injury for Chelsea? But hopefully it's nothing serious. He does, you know, he sees out the game and hopefully it's not too bad. 85% pass accuracy for Noni, 36 touches, 17 out of 20 passes completed, 6 dribbles and 1 goal. And Jess, I mean, look, I don't think it was vintage Noni. You know, I don't think he wasn't necessarily too involved too much, you know, until sort of later on when Chelsea sort of sparked into life again later on. But he gets a goal and it just, you know, for him, just continues a run of form, which I said post, you know, that he came on, you know, the dying embers of that Wolves game and, you know, had a good cameo. And just since then, this has been, and we'll get on to it later when we talk about Chelsea, but this has just been quite a, you know, a solidly just a good month for Noni Madueke and just putting his name in Poch's plans moving forward, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all you can ask for such a young player. And I think he's been taking the chances that he does get, and it's been lovely to see. He's been adding the numbers and having a lot more confidence in himself. So it will be interesting to see what the manager's choices is when it comes to Villa, because I think maybe it will be Connor and not Mudryk or Noni. But if we're going by today, I think Noni has much a better case to be starting that game.
Yeah, it was a really, really nice to see Noni just continue his good form. Alfie Gilchrist comes on for Ben Chilwell, gets 25 minutes. Again, just nice to see Alfie just continuously involved. It's been, again, a good month for Alfie just being involved in this side. And Jess, another one of the other subs, Conor Gallagher, who comes on for Armando Breyer. I'll be honest, when I first saw this sub come on, I just thought, oh, Poch, really? Is it hugely necessary? I love the bones off Conor Gallagher, but I'm looking at that Chelsea team, nothing. If there is a game Friday, I obviously completely understand getting Armando Breyer off, you know, because he is basically Chelsea's main striker at the moment. But Jet, and you know, I did think maybe can you bring David Washington on? It's sort of a perfect situation. But Jess, that doesn't happen. Conor Gallagher comes on and he made that 25 minutes count. 85% pass accuracy, 26 touches, 17 out of 20 passes completed, 3 out of 4 ground duels won, 2 out of 2 dribbles completed, 2 key passes, 2 assists, 1 big chance created. Again, he came on and said, and that when that game sort of was, you know, petering out as it was, he did then inject some life into that game and it did allow Chelsea to go on and, you know, make that scoreline even more emphatic. It was interesting, you know, him being left out. The starting 11, for what it's worth, I didn't really have an issue with it because I think he had, you know, I mentioned over previous squad against Fulham, you know, at times I felt, you know, in that game he played it too safe and Poch was getting frustrated with him and I didn't think he was great in the Fulham game. And obviously I don't think he was great in that Middlesbrough game. He kind of gets lost in just the general big picture of just how, you know, losing 1-0 in that first leg to Middlesbrough. Jesse, you know, had, you know, quite a few games, you know, after a really encouraging start of season. But again, that was just really nice for him to come on in those 25 minutes. And again, just, you know, just show his worth to this Chelsea team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he started a little bit slowly. The game actually sort of slower than the obviously the other players were already playing. So I think he took a few minutes to really settle into the game. But once he did, I think he had like two assists. So he finished the game in a strong fashion. My only critique, and this is not about Connor, is it's about the game. My only critique in the game about the manager. And again, it's very nitpicking because I'm very, very happy and I don't like to be that person, but I'm trying to be objective. So for nitpicking, my only objection for the substitutions would be taking out Mudryk and Breyer. And the reason for it is because neither were playing good. Right? They're both not playing well enough, in my opinion. So in a normal game, in a normal scenario, I think those would be the right, you know, people to come off. But I think because we were already 4-0 up, we needed to preserve the players and having an eye on Friday. I think we could have rested key players, maybe like Cole Palmer or Enzo Fernandez or something like that. Or maybe even if your plan is to play Thiago again on Friday, then maybe rest him or whatever it is. So I think he could have, and I'm talking about Pac here, he could have an eye on Friday a bit more, because this is just a feeling. So maybe I'm talking complete nonsense, but I think the reason Armando came off was not because he is going to play on Friday, but because he was not playing that well, which was the same reason for Mudryk. And so that would be my only criticism of the substitutions that we saw. Again, normal circumstances, completely fine. But because of we had room in the scoreline and all of that, maybe we could have rested a few key players more. But again, just nitpicking if we had to criticize something.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, I said, obviously, Mudryk for Nonni, I guess, is one, because also that does just limit the subs you can make later on. I said, as for Armando, I don't know if he does start against Aston Villa, then I think it kind of makes sense that he did get subbed. And I don't really have an issue with that. I guess Ben Vioffshoes, you know, did Colonies come? Could you have, you know, brought David on Bash, like a kind of a minor point? Moises Caicedo does get rest. He gets a 20-minute rest. So Carney comes on for him. Just again, good to see Carney getting some minutes. Obviously, he started the season, you know, really well. And obviously, that injury just in that second game season just, you know, happened at the worst time. And hopefully he can, you know, establish a role forward. And then, you know, Jess has said, you know, just again, a nice moment for Leo Castledine. You know, I think he was meant to sort of be involved against Preston or so and missed out with illness, but he gets his moment, his Chelsea debut, and said it's just, you know, nice that who knows how long, you know, how what type of Chelsea careers these players will have. But again, we've seen Alfie Gilchrist in this last month, you know, get some game time. And now Leo Castledine gets a debut. And yes, Chelsea have got a lot of players that are injured as well, but it also, you know, been quite nice that, you know, in this game and you know, in the last month, so Poch has been quite happy to go to the academy. Maybe not as much as some people would like, but he's still been, you know, happy to go to the academy. And as last one said, just a nice moment for Leo Castledine.
I'm always going to be happy when we see an academy debut. I know some people on Twitter think about, you know, other people being very close to the academy and all of that, but maybe it's because here in Brazil, for our clubs, we're just all so joyous and happy when we have someone from the academy involved in the senior team, and maybe get a call up to the national team eventually. It's like a something to be, you know, that we feel so much pride in that. And when I started being a Chelsea fan when I was a kid, I kind of transferred, I think, that thought line. So I'm just always very joyful, and just I feel so proud of those, you know, the kids, because the academy is part of the club, and to see someone so connected to the club and to what it represents have their debut is always a fantastic moment, in my opinion, and something that we can appreciate. As you said, we don't know what the future holds, but it's going to be a moment in memory for the young players, and that's always something incredibly nice.
Yeah. Jess, I kind of want to just then move this, you know, forward on, you know, just chatting about Poch. Obviously, I think, you know, he came into this under pressure, obviously, after what happened in that first leg against Middlesbrough. Crashing out of his competition would have been unthinkable and would have probably done a lot of damage to just how he was viewed amongst this fan base. And Jess, obviously, I know you know, a tiny bit, you know, a bit critical there about, you know, subs. Could he maybe got, you know, both Palmer and Enzo off? But Jess, for what it's worth, we saw players, you know, for the most part, you know, given who we had in their actual positions, we saw Ben Chilwell at left back. You know, small victories, right? Small victories.
Yeah, and we saw actually Levi playing left centre back, and how much better he is when he plays in centre back, and that was fantastic. You know, I've been critical of our manager, not as critical as other people, but I think we are slowly improving. And to say that we're not is to be blind. I think you can't be, you know, that harsh. We have to stay objective, and there are visible improvements in the way that we play, and also with the players returning from injuries, allowing players to play in their actual positions and all of that. It's a boost for us. So I just say we have to wait until the end of the season. I'm not one of those people that ask for the manager to be sacked. I think after a season, you can look back and see whether or not the manager deserves the confidence and deserves to have more time or not. But I think he made, if not all, 99% of the decisions were correct today. And there's something to give him praise for. And I'm very, very happy with him.
Yeah, and Jess, just on a sort of wider point, you know, obviously that first leg, you know, the feeling was bad on the podcast. You know, we kind of said it was really bad, but I made sure not to go overboard because it was two legs and I was pretty confident Chelsea would turn it around and was, you know, wanted to feel that way. And Jess, in general, since that performance at Wolves on Christmas Eve, it just left, you know, a sour taste mouth. It's been, you know, pretty perfect sort of month since then. And, you know, granted, at times it's not been the most convincing. At times there's been things to leave you scared and things to leave you wanting more. But Jess, since that Wolves game, Chelsea have progressed to a Wembley final in the Carabao Cup. They've progressed to the fourth round of the FA Cup. We've got obviously a tie against Aston Villa on Friday, which we'll get onto in a bit. And they've won three games in the Premier League. And Jess, in amongst this time as well, they have closed the gap and, you know, and moved up in table as well on teams above them. Said they are, we currently sit ninth in the Premier League, but we are 1 point off Manchester United in eighth, 1 point off Brighton in seventh, 4 points off West Ham in sixth. As you said, you know, a few minutes ago, just then, you know, proper judgment can come at the end of the season. But this month has probably felt, you know, barring that horrible Middlesbrough first leg, it's the most calm and just relatively, and I say relatively because there were moments in it, but relatively peaceful and just relatively like one of the most pleasing months and probably one of the longest periods of time at Chelsea where it's actually just felt quite happy for the first time in a while. And you look at the fixtures, there's nothing to, you know, necessarily go overboard about. Chelsea have essentially taken care of business and done what was expected. But given what we've seen at Chelsea at the start of this season and what we watched throughout all of last season, that was no guarantee. So just thoughts on what has been essentially, you know, just a really, since Wolves and say till right now, just a really pleasant month, which is quite nice. I've been able to be feeling pretty positive about Chelsea for a sustained period of time, which is nice, isn't it?
And we can enjoy our weekends a lot more, right? So it's perfect. As you said, it's taking care of business, and that's what we should be doing. And as you said, at the beginning of the season, we were not doing that. So I think it came to a point where we needed results, right? We needed results. We needed to climb the table. We needed to close the gap. We needed to, you know, give hope, I think, and the sense that we still have something to fight for this season. And I think we succeeded in doing that. We closed the gap in the league for the European positions. We are still fighting. Obviously, we're in the final and we're fighting for the FA Cup. So we gave that hope back, something to look forward to as fans. And that's what we needed to do in terms of the results. And as I said, slowly we are seeing progressions in terms of the way that we perform in the actual matches. We have two really big games coming up, obviously, with the FA Cup game and then a Liverpool game on the league. So I think those two results can be massive for us, or, you know, if we can get them or something positive in our way, it can be massive for our season. So we just have to wait and see. And obviously it's Chelsea, right? So anything can happen. And I'm always going to believe that we can win any game ever, because again, we're Chelsea. But yeah, so we're seeing improvements, and again, with the injured players coming back, can help us a lot. I think Carney is someone really interesting that can give us that tall presence that sometimes we throw miss, because he's lanky, he's tall, he has the flair like Cole. And so excited to see him back with us. And obviously Chile, I think we may be gonna see Malagusto back again, which would be wonderful to have two fullbacks fit again, playing in their actual positions. That would be incredible, and it's such a small thing for us, but it would be fantastic. And also someone that we haven't talked about, and it's Petrovic. I think he has been great for us, very, very solid. I'm loving what I'm seeing for him, very, very young, and I think he has been helping us a lot actually in this run. So excited to see more of him. But yeah, positive signs, things to look forward to, and I think this run, you know, the past run of games gave me hope and something to believe in again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Indeed, and I think that's the most important thing for us as fans to cling on to. Jess, we'll just kind of quickly look, you know, ahead to Aston Villa on Friday. I said, if this at the start, this did feel like a season defining week. Aston Villa on Friday is obviously a big game, and it is still, you know, really important for Chelsea season. It does feel that a tiny little weight, a tiny bit of pressure sort of has been lifted due to the fact that we are through to a Wembley final. But Jess, it is a short turnaround, and as you know, as pleased as we are that we did see players sort of in their natural positions, I'm just going to throw it out to you. Do you think we're going to see that on Friday? Because I am not sure we see a Ben Chilwell start on Friday. I could be wrong. He gets substituted after 65 minutes. You know, he'd obviously had a 10-day break before this. I think it would be risky to start him against Aston Villa on Friday. But then again, I'm also just, you know, wary that Chelsea don't seem to learn their lesson, and Poch doesn't always seem to learn their lesson due to the fact we just continuously play gusto, and now we're kind of suffering the small consequences of that. Just a quick look ahead to Friday night. I guess the lineup that started tonight, are there many changes you would make to it? And if so, which changes would you make to the team that we saw tonight to play on Friday?
I think it all depends on, as you said, how fit Chile is to play on, you know, such short amount of time. And also Malo Gusto. Part of me thinks the reason he didn't play today is because, you know, he wasn't 100% fit. He had the muscle overload thing. But also to not risk him because we're going to have, you know, Villa and Liverpool. So we have one fullback. So maybe we can guarantee at least one fullback for Villa. So obviously it depends on if Chile is fit, then I would start him if he is fit. Or at least start one fit fullback. So I think at least one of Malo Gusto and Chile have to start, because otherwise we look too stale and they add a lot of threat in terms of our offensive output. So in my opinion, it would be I don't even know how to put it, but it would be almost like boring. In a sense, you know, where we play from side to side and doesn't go anywhere, and you don't have overlapping with our wingers and all of that. And I don't want to see that against Villa. I don't think that leads to anywhere good in terms of the result that we need. So at least one of them has to start, in my opinion. And you're right, it is a risk. But I'm not the medical department, so I don't know which of them. Ideally, both would start, but I don't think that's feasible either. And then I think we're going to see Conor Gallagher come back in, and then maybe no Armando for that. And you have Cole, okay, so number
if we
nine.
Say Conor comes in, if we say Conor comes in, are we putting Sterling up top? Are we putting Palmer on the right? And then is it between Mudrick and Madueke for who starts on the left? Because this might seem bizarre to people, but I actually think Mudrick might be better suited to playing Aston Villa than Madueke, just due to the fact that I think there will be more space for him due to how they play. We know they like playing a high line, and I think Mudrick, if you can get him running into space, is perhaps maybe best suited for that. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there'll be some people who won't want Sterling to start, but I think Raheem Sterling is, you know, just based off this performance, based off winning a penalty against Fulham, I just think I don't see a world where Raheem Sterling doesn't start. And I said, especially if, as you said, you suggest that Armando's substitution was purely for actual performance and not for being rested for Friday. If we say that Armando doesn't start Friday, then I think you've probably got maybe Sterling up top, unless you put Palmer up top, but I'd rather probably have Palmer out wide and maybe Sterling through the middle. I don't know, just thoughts.
Again, this is, if it was completely up to me, I would be playing, people were going to let, I would be playing David for a long time now. You know this. So David would be playing. So I'm not thinking about what is up to me, but what I think Pochettino will do. So I think in this, again, I don't see how Mudrick starts based on what he did today. So I agree with you. I think maybe Villa is a lot more suited for him, and I think he would be a good option. But I don't know how much the way that he played today will influence Klopp's decision for Friday. So, but yeah, I'm expecting Cole Palmer number 9 actually, but I might be wrong. Again, it's just an expectation. I might be completely off here. So, you know, it's just a something that made me think based on his substitution.
Fair enough. Well, we'll have to wait and see. This that is Friday night. A quick turnaround for Chelsea, but a potential, for it to be a truly wonderful week with Chelsea progressing in both competitions. We will have to wait and see. But for now, Chelsea have booked a place in the Carabao Cup final, and it means, thank God, I don't have to worry about Chelsea playing Spurs on a Friday night in the Premier League. I can instead enjoy doing a podcast about Chelsea playing in a Carabao Cup final against either Liverpool or Fulham. Come on, Fulham. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up till the next episode of That Chelsea Podcast. It's been a truly wonderful night. It's been probably one of the happiest nights of the season. It was a near, as we've gone on, it's been a near perfect night for Chelsea in the Carabao Cup. I want to thank Jess for coming on. Jess, it's been a pleasure. And I said, if there were any doubts about your curse, I think you've put it to bed tonight with a, which was a truly sensational Chelsea win, wasn't it?
Fantastic. I'm so happy. Sometimes I talk like very calmly and people can tell how excited I am, but I'm so happy. And I'm also so happy as we talked about because my mom got to see it and to see her shouting and screaming for a sport that she didn't really care about before was fantastic. And she was like a true fan shouting. So that was just a bonus for me. It was great. Today was great. One thing that I will say today that I loved was the way that we pressed, like the whole team pressed, and we didn't see that again on the first leg. So hopefully it's something that translates to our next game on Friday, and this is something that I'm hoping to see. And if we do, I think we actually, you know, we have a chance. We have a decent chance.
Jess, as always, your guests again to give yourselves one final plug. So, tell people where they can find you. If they've enjoyed listening to what you've said on the podcast, Dave, and where can they find you?
If any of you like any of my rants and ramblings, or just want to talk random things with me, I'm on Twitter at Je underline Frota. So you're more than welcome to come say hi.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Jess's links will be in the description below. As for us, on Twitter or X at Chelsea Pod, we're on Instagram at Chelsea Pod, we're on all your usual podcast platform providers, Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please feel free to leave a rating review. Whenever I tweet, put out any likes and reposts go a long way. And let's share the love, people. It's been one of the best nights of Chelsea season. They've reached the Carabao Cup final, and we look forward to covering that. And hopefully, what will be, the start of a glorious, glorious era under Pochettino. But there's a lot of football to go till then. And said, we'll be back on Saturday for you to look back at that on Friday night's game against Aston Villa. So until the next episode, keep the blue flag flying high.
Good evening, Nick. Wembley. That is all.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.